Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever dreamed of one day owning your own business, but just don't know where to begin? Then you've tuned into the right show. On All Things Franchising, you will hear from top national franchisers, successful franchisees, attorneys, CPAs, and others who support this fast-growing business model. So grab a cup of coffee and pen and notepad, because you will want to capture the invaluable information you hear on today's show. And now, here is your host, Linda Ballesteros.
Hey folks, welcome to All Things Franchising. I'm so glad you're here today. My name is Linda Ballesteros and I'm your host today. This is going to be a very exciting episode. I am just really honored to have the guest that we have today, and I'll tell you a little bit more about him in just a bit. I've been receiving messages from some of my listeners saying that they really want not just to hear about from franchisors, franchisees, but maybe just some basic information about running a small business, starting a small business. And so that's kind of what we've done for you guys. We've brought you exactly what you've been asking for. So today, my guest is Joe Decker, and he is the small business technician. Joe has drawn a wealth of business knowledge and experience in his professional career. He worked with world-renowned companies like Rockwell International, Igloo Products. He has also been an entrepreneur and small business owner. He recently retired as a director from the Small Business Development Center after 20 years. And I tell you what, folks, I am so excited to announce that Joe has agreed, well, this is his first show, but Joe has agreed to share his expertise with us on a regular basis here at All Things Franchising. So help me in welcoming Joe Decker. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Linda, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I am so excited because you are just you're an encyclopedia for small business, and you've got so much to share with people. It just is, and much of it, Joe, is basic information. Before we get started, I just want to say that I looked up a few stats this morning. I love to see stats. And the number one reason that a lot of businesses fail is because there's no market need out there. And the number two reason is money. Joe, tell me, why has that happened?
Well, Linda, first let me thank you for inviting me for your show. It's really an honor. And you're right, this is the first time I attend a show, a business show, to provide information on the business community, which is what keeps our country going.
Yes.
I love the work I do. I was with the University of Houston for 22 years and 2 months, retired, and I don't play golf, so I've decided that start my business and help others that are trying to start their business. Mm-hmm. And the two reasons that you mentioned, not having a demand for the product or the service or insufficient capital, that all relates back to planning. Many of us, including myself, when I started my business, I left corporate America. I had worked for three corporations, and I did a specific job, and I was paid well for it, retired from the corporations, and decided to start my own business. Unfortunately, I did not attend a course or attend an event that promoted starting a business or the do's and don'ts of starting a business. So I and two other gentlemen from the company just left, started our company, printed our business cards, and provided services, and we were making money.
Well, it doesn't seem that hard. It sounds like, Joe, if you're making money, then you must have been successful, right?
Well, that's one part of it. We did not even form a company. We did not file with the state or the county the name of our company or its purpose. And so legally, we were illegally operating a business until we realized that we had to do that. So things like that are what's important for people that are beginning to start a business or want to start a business. It's very critical that certain steps be taken.
Absolutely. And, you know, Joe, the thing is, you talked about coming out of corporate. When I came out of a banking career, 30-plus year career in banking, I'd been around money. I'd been around accounts. I'd been around businesses. So how hard could it be? These people were doing it. Couldn't I do it? So isn't that kind of the mindset that a lot of people go into this?
Well, when you're working for a corporation, you have a specific job, and you do the job based on the requirements of the job. And the rest of the employees of the corporation do their specific jobs. However, you rarely get involved with their specific jobs. And so you think that basically if you just go out there and start a business, that's what it's all about. It is so far from that. A startup business has many issues it has to deal with before it starts itself. And it also has to comply with federal regulations, state regulations, county regulations, in order to be legal and operate with the services or products they do. So yes, it's very important that take place.
So you talked about before you even get to the startup stage. So if somebody's listening and they're thinking, you know, I've been wanting to start a business, me and my brother-in-law, we've talked about going into business together. Where do they start before they even have the concept? What should they do to prepare themselves, their finances, before they even get to the point where they've decided to go into business?
Well, the very first thing that happens out there in America is, you know, you have people that leave corporate America. You have people that have lost their jobs, whether it's in industry, manufacturing, or the services sector, or even retail. And basically, they see somebody else operating a business that they know, a friend, a relative, an old buddy. And they look at that and say, well, you know, if they're doing it, we can do it. And so that's where it begins. But whether the individual begins by himself, or there's a partner or a family group that gets involved, they have to make sure that the services and the products that they plan to produce or manufacture or sell, that there's a demand for it.
Right.
And so the demand of that product or service is what generates the capital, that generates the cash flow to operate the business. And so one of the things that I recommend is that basically they contact a consultant or attend a business course at a university and get the basics. And the basics are very simple. You know, what product or service do you plan on selling or providing? That's the very first one. And so you need to make a list of those things. I mean, if you're going to make sandwiches, well, you're going to be competing against other sandwich shops. If you're going to be selling cosmetics, you're going to be competing with very large corporations that sell the product not only at retail outlets but also on television and things like that. So you have to get an idea of who your competitors would be, because they are going to take clients from you and they are going to take money from you that you don't get when you don't get the client walking into your door. So those are some of the very basic ones. And of course, the other thing too is the capital investment. For instance, if you're going to be manufacturing a product, or you're going to be providing a service like, let's say, automotive services or brake repair services, in today's world, an automotive service shop has to have some very sophisticated electronic equipment to test for emissions of gases, determine if the vehicle is operating properly, if the computer is doing things right. So it's not only just starting the business, but you have to look at the investment. And once you put the investment down, X number of machines or X number of tables and chairs, X numbers of whatever you're going to need to operate the business, then the big question comes up. Okay, I need $200,000 to do this business. Do I have $200,000? Do I have to go to a bank or a credit union and get $200,000? My family is going to help me do this. I received a bonus from the corporation, and I have enough to start. All those questions have to be answered, because at some point you're going to have to make the investment. And so let's say that you're going to go to a bank or a credit union or a funding source. Well, you walk in there. In most cases, people walk into these banks and credit unions, and they'll meet an officer and say, "Well, what are you doing, sir?" "Well, I'm going to start a business." "Well, okay, what is it?" "Well, I'm going to repair brakes." "Okay, how much do you need?" "Well, I may need between $100,000 and $300,000. Always the case. They give a range.
Mm-hmm.
What that tells the banker or the bank officer is that individual hasn't really put things down on paper.
Right.
And he's not very sure of what amount of money he needs.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, the banker says, "Look, sir, why don't you go talk to so-and-so, or go meet so-and-so, or go to this university and get more information, because you're really not ready to get a loan from us. And besides, we'll check your credit scores, and if your scores are not in the 660, 680, 700s or above, there's a good chance that we will not fund you." So these are the things that must be done before going into business, especially credit scores. Most people don't know their credit scores. I had instances where a client comes in and says, "Oh, I just bought an automobile. Oh, we just bought a home. So my credit must be good." Not necessarily.
Right.
Yeah, there's three agencies out there that monitor credit for everyone that does any transactions with credit. And so you've got Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And generally, their scores are pretty much in line with each other. But in some cases, they may have one that's very low for some reason. Something happened. They got a report from somewhere that person had a low score, an issue with payment. And so you may have two good scores, but you may have a score that's way below the line that banks use to apply credit. The problem being that banks will select only one credit reporting company for their services. So if they happen to pick the one that's got issues with you, guess what? That's not what they use, and they'll use that, and you won't get your loan. So there has to be some preliminary work done to do that.
So, when you talk about credit scores, and when you talk about purchasing a home or purchasing a car, those are not purchases you would necessarily want to make if you're wanting to buy a business. Isn't that right, Joe? Wouldn't you want to be conservative with your spending?
Believe it or not, when you purchase a home or a car, they'll look at your credit scores. But basically, you've got to remember one thing. They have an asset that belongs to them until you make the final payment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they're secure in the fact that they have a vehicle that's under the name of the credit union or the bank, or they have a mortgage on the home. When you start a business, it's pure risk.
Right.
You might buy all this equipment, but there's no guarantee that if your business goes south, that the bank will be able to sell that equipment. So that equipment is risk, you know. And so the banks look at purchasing a home, purchasing a car, totally different than starting your own business.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, yes, you're right. If you're gonna get into a business and you're gonna need cash, you might not want to go into a home. You might want to continue renting, maybe, or maybe staying in your smaller home.
Sure.
What you have to remember is you have to conserve cash. You have to have cash ready. And in most cases, in most loans that people start, there's a 20 to 25% requirement cash deposit that must be placed in the bank for the individual to get funding from the bank. So it's not like you walk in there and you say, "I need $100,000, and they give you $100,000. If you need $100,000, they're going to want 20%, which is, you know, $20,000 that you have to put in cash in your account in your startup business. So these are things that a lot of people don't know. And of course, they don't know them because they've never been through the process of starting their own business.
Right. And when you talk about having money, having reserves there, it is good to have that money set aside, certainly to help run the business. But you just also have to remember your personal expenses continue. And unless you've got a spouse in the house, household that continues to work and bring in a salary, then it's not a matter of turning your resignation in with ABC Company one day, hanging your shingle out that says I'm in business for myself, and the next week you get a check. It doesn't work that way, does it, Joe?
No, it doesn't. Linda, you've got a very good point, and I can assure you that every bank and every credit union and every funding source that's out there, I don't care what state in the union, when an individual wants to start a business and they walk in there with either their business plan or they got pretty much information, the bank looks for a second source of financing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, mm-hmm. let's say it's a married couple and the wife is a teacher and the husband works for an oil company, and the wife decides it's time she's going to have her own cosmetic outlet, and so the bank will say, we'll be glad to fund it as long as your husband stays working for the oil company, because they know that as long as one of the partners of the marriage couple is receiving income, sufficient income to cover their personal expenses, which everybody has, house, car, kids, insurance, food, water, utilities, insurance, all that stuff, it has to be covered whether you start the business or not. It's separate from the business, but it has to be covered. So the bank will look for a second source of financing. It is really, really sad, and I've seen some cases where both the husband and wife start a company and resign from their jobs then look for money. It is not a pleasant thing, because the bank will reject, deny any loan if there's no second source of money coming in. So if somebody out there is wanting to do that, make sure your husband keeps working for the oil company, or you keep working for your wife, keeps working for the oil company or whatever. But remember, one person has to continue to generate income to cover personal expenses, plus have some leftover capital to make the note in case the business doesn't have the ability to make the note payment that month or number of months. So you're right.
Like you said, though, it's all about planning. And that planning period, how far ahead should they plan, Joe, prior to actually pulling the plug and say, okay, I'm going to quit my banking job today, and I'm going to go start another business. How far ahead would you advise them to start planning?
Well, generally, you can put a lot of information, depending on your contacts and depending on you who you speak with. I mean, if you hire a business consultant, or if you attend some university courses that are in business courses, things like that. Generally speaking, the way I've seen, my experience has been that people generally will do 3 to 6 months, at the latest 9 months. Mm-hmm. To enter a business, they get to do their research. They secure whatever funding they can, either from family members or savings, without going to the bank yet. And so they'll do some preparation, and basically once they have that, then they can put their elements together and approach a bank, and then begin the business operation. One of the things that I see happen a lot is that they'll go out and they'll do their business plan, and they'll prepare for their financing, and they make sure that they have sufficient capital in reserve if they need it, and they make sure of the competition and the product services. And then they'll say, okay, they go to the bank. The bank says, all right, here's your money. Go ahead and start your business. And they'll go rent space at some strip center, and so they go in there and they start fixing this, fixing that, and doing a little bit of build out. Sometimes the landlord will pay for it. Sometimes they'll do half. Sometimes they won't do any. But anyway, everything seems to be ready, and then the occupancy permit portion of the job comes up. And that's the permit that the fire marshal in the county will issue to any building that has individuals walking in for services or products. If there's anything wrong with the electrical system or the plumbing system or the sanitation system, or they fail to get a permit for a special machine or special equipment, or there's a danger of fire with something, they will not be issued the occupation permit. If it's not issued, they cannot do business. And what happens is, guess what? The landlord still is asking for his rent.
Absolutely.
Payment,
yep.
And they have to pay for all the equipment they brought in, and they got payments to make. And until they get that occupation permit, they can't do business. And I have seen businesses that started and were not able to get that permit to allow people to go into their building, and they close shop. So that's very important. You
wow.
have to make sure you have a very honest landlord that is very open with you. You have to have an attorney check your lease agreement, and you want to make sure that somebody looks at the equipment, the electrical, all the things that are safety issues that you want to make sure are not a problem so that you can start your business. That's,
and you know,
I've
Joe, those are all things that the green entrepreneur doesn't know about. And I've seen some horror stories around lease agreements. So having your advice there, having an attorney to review the lease agreement is critical down the road, especially. It can just become a horror story. I tell you what, Joe, we're coming up to 20 hours here. I want to run some commercial breaks, but when we come back, I know you probably have a ton of stories that you could share with us. Do you have one where you could talk a little bit about how maybe they didn't do their market evaluation, or they didn't have the amount of capital needed before they got started, since those are basically the two topics we've been talking about?
Sure.
Very good. Okay, folks, we're going to take a real quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be hearing more from Joe Decker, the Small Business Tech.
Do you know a family fighting cancer? The Jest Foundation nonprofit was founded right here in Katy, Texas, by cancer survivor Michelle Perzan, whose vision is to assist those currently fighting by providing grants to help support family needs, whether spiritually, emotionally, or financially. Michelle and her family know all too well that there comes a time when the day-to-day needs we take for granted become impossible. Jest Foundation has been able to bless 100% of the applications submitted, and now they need your help. Find out more by going to jestfoundation.org.
Ready to update your tired old kitchen or bathroom? Then you need to call Gambone's Custom Home Improvements. Gambone's does all phases of remodeling, specializing in kitchen and bath remodels. Gambone's Custom Home Improvements is a company you can trust. Family owned and operated with an A-plus rating with the BBB. Call Gambone's today, 832-437-8898, or check them out on the web at gamboneschi.com. That's gamboneschi.com. Gambone's Custom Home Improvements, where you will get quality work at a quality price.
Are you dreaming of owning your own business but just don't know where to begin? The wait is now over. All Things Franchising is the radio show that you've been waiting for. Whether you're looking to create a living that will allow you to leave corporate America, change your lifestyle by growing your business, allowing you to experience some of the fun things in life, or if you are looking to build a legacy that will support your family for years to come, Linda Ballesteros is your host on All Things Franchising, where she interviews franchise experts from around the world. We feature top franchisers, franchisees, attorneys, CPAs, as well as others who support this fast-growing business model. Go to our Facebook and Twitter pages to listen to past shows and join the conversations on All Things Franchising.
House Talk Radio. Join Tony and Wendy Gambone on House Talk Radio, where they talk all things house. From tips on home repairs and remodeling to best practices on buying and selling a home, hiring contractors, home loans, and insurance, as well as decorating ideas and how to get the most bang for your buck. If you would like more information about House Talk Radio, go to housetalkradio.com.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Franchising. My name is Linda Ballesteros. I'm your host today. And our guest, Joe Decker, is the small business. And when we left, Joe, we asked you if you could maybe share a story of someone who maybe started a little bit too soon.
Well, one of the there was an individual that had borrowed a sizable amount of money to open up a restaurant. And unfortunately, one of the things that he failed to do was determine the competition in the area. And so in addition to that, he was able to obtain a building, which he converted to the restaurant and spent a lot of money painting a building and, you know, repairing the building. The landlord obviously appreciated that because it upgraded his building. But this gentleman was so desperate to start his business that he wanted to open that restaurant and went ahead and spent a great deal of his capital to build out the building, to repair it and have it ready for the restaurant that the food he was selling. Unfortunately, what happened was he was so eager to get the lowest rent he could get that he obtained the building in a side street in the city that had a main street. And he felt that he would still get enough people to attend or to go to his restaurant, even though it was in a side street, with all the painting and all the wonderful things he did to it. Well, it's the old story that it's very true. Location, location, location. He started his restaurant. He hired his people, cooks and everything. And unfortunately, he never reached the income that he needed with enough and sufficient clients to be able to sustain and make the payment to the bank. And so within a period of 6 months, the restaurant was closed. And it was bad location. He spent a lot of money initially in a location that really wasn't going to provide the traffic that he needed to attract people to his restaurant, even though he spent a great deal of money making it look very nice with a new paint job and new chairs and new tables and everything. But the location was not the proper location for that restaurant. And there were other restaurants in the main street which did the same food style that he was in. So he really didn't have a chance to succeed there. Whether he talked to anybody or not about that, or if he requested assistance from a business consultant, I have no idea. But within 6 months, there was a closed sign in front of the restaurant. And, of course, the landlord was now looking for a new business to place in that area. So
important. There's also another piece to that story, Joe, is a lot of people realize that when you take on a property, when you rent a property like that, there is usually an agreement, a rental agreement, and many times that rental agreement will be 4 years out, and that landlord can sue you for the whole 4 years of rent that said that you would pay them. I can make someone take bankruptcy.
It's a legal binding between you and the landlord. And so people say, well, I'll form a corporation so that I won't have any liability if I leave, or I'll form an LLC if I leave. Well, you've got to remember that most landlords will have you sign personally for that agreement. And then, of course, you can sign for your corporation, too. But if you fail to meet the requirements of that lease, they will certainly go for your personal signature, which forces you or legally requires you to make payment for the services that you said you were going to have that you couldn't commit. Mm-hmm. So, you have to be very careful.
Absolutely. And you can't get so eager and excited about your widget, because just like you said, I may have had the best widget in town. It was around the corner. And if somebody else was offering a similar widget, people are not going to go hunting for you. You have to make it easy for people. And it is, it, and at the end of the day, it's not always about the widget.
Well, the other thing that is very common is you have to make sure that when you enter a strip mall area with your business, that the landlord guarantees you in writing that he'll not have a similar business on the other end of the strip center. There was a case of an individual who opened a cleaning service right in the middle of a strip center. And within that strip center, there wasn't anything, there wasn't another cleaner. But the landlord had a little section of land that was separated from the main strip center, but not by much. And he rented that to another cleaner. So all of a sudden, there were two cleaning services within walking distance of that strip center. And not only walking distance, but car servicing. And so it was very difficult for that individual to succeed, because they had a drive-in cleaning service that he didn't have, but it was on a separate piece of land, but right next to the strip center, same landlord. So you have to be careful. You have to check things out.
Right, right. You know, Joe, we've talked about this when we've met, but these types of events, making these types of decisions, in my life, I have had to fall back on faith, you know, and not go into it not educated, but also, but going into it knowing that if I listen to that, you know, inside voice, the whispers, whatever you want to call that, how much of a part does that play in your life as you do?
Well, I'm very strong in my faith. I believe in God and Christ, and I try to lead my life with their teachings, of course. It's very important to have a backing, a support. I mean, you can have experts, you can have consultants, you can have a husband or wife, you know, helping you on. You can have friends, associates. There's a lot of sources for assistance. But at the end of the day, you are the individual that is responsible for the operation, for the business. And so the weight of that business is on you, and how you handle it and how you disperse the pressure is very important. And so it's very important, I think, that to have a faith-based belief in what you're doing, and of course ask for guidance. And believe it or not, in many cases, when you do pray and you ask God for help or assistance with an issue that is detrimental to you or your business, somehow something happens to provide you the information or give you an alternate decision that you can make or provide another choice. And so it's in my world, it's a good thing to have, because it has helped me throughout my life. It always seems that when I leave a company and I go to another company to start a new job, something happens at the old company. And so it's like somebody's been guiding me throughout my life into different companies, different positions, different. And sometimes I'll be one of several candidates and they'll pick me for a specific reason, which I never thought was that important. So I tell anybody that is either starting a business or is in business, it's a good thing to pray, and it's a good thing to ask God for help as part of your daily life. And I think if you do that, your chances of success are pretty good. Mm-hmm. You still have to pay your bills. You still have to treat your customers nicely. You have to have good customer service. You have to keep track of your expenses. You want to make sure you have a good accountant, a good CPA. Those elements are all part of running a business. It's not as simple as it looks. As you walk by a building, you see all this activity. All that activity has to be controlled, has to be monitored, has to be kept up with, and not only in your internal reporting, but reporting to the state, to the county, and the federal agencies that if that's required, those elements must be done on a constant basis.
Absolutely.
Otherwise,
absolutely.
You start losing ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and part of, you know, when you're talking about making sure that you have a faith, what that's done for me in many ways, Joe, is that it allows my brain to quiet a bit, if that's possible. It does allow my brain to just quiet just a little bit so that I can make better decisions, so that I can notice those little signs that I'm supposed to be going this way, or sure that I meet the right people. Because if you're constantly in a whirlwind and you never take time to get quiet, you can't hear it. You just can never hear
exactly.
It. You can't pick up on it.
Right, right. Well, while you're in business, whether you have an outlet, retail outlet, or whatever, you're involved the moment you walk into your business and the moment you lock the doors to leave. And even after that, you've got things to do. So
yeah.
You are constantly being affected by that business. It's pluses and minuses, and it's like in a tunnel. And so I tell people that if they're running into problems, have issues, or there's something they can't figure out as to why certain things are happening to them, it's always a good idea to invite somebody to come by and visit.
Mm-hmm.
That's familiar with business consulting and things like that. Generally speaking, the moment they walk into a business, into a site, a location, they'll see things that are not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the individuals working there every day, 8 to 10 hours a day, have overlooked it because they're so busy doing other things. They get tunnel vision. And so sometimes all it takes is for somebody to come in and look at things and spend a couple of hours at different times of the week and walk in, walk out, and you'll be able to see things and say, hey, that's not a good thing for customers to come back, or they're not that sign shouldn't be there, or that information is so hidden they can't find it. And so there's you want somebody to come in and just take a look at it and make some recommendations. And
mm-hmm.
nine times out of ten, sometimes that recommendation will make the change that's needed in the business. As part of why you got introverted into that little area of work. So it's very important to do that.
Absolutely. Joe, if somebody's listening and they think, you know, this guy has probably got the answers that's going to help me move forward, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, my company is basically called Joseph Decker & Associates, operate out of Katy, Texas. My phone number is 832-876-7015, and like I tell my clients, I'll take calls up to 10 o'clock at night, with exceptions of Sunday, or they can contact me by my email address, deckergriffin@yahoo.com. That's deckergriffin@yahoo.com. And when I receive a call, I meet with clients, whether it's at a restaurant or their business site, or the location, restaurant, things like that. I'll speak with a client for half an hour to 45 minutes to get an idea of what they're trying to do. If I can assist them, I will mention my services and what I can do. If I can't, I will find somebody that will assist them. I believe in closing the loop, closing the circle. I don't want anybody to leave without information. If they came to me for assistance and I couldn't provide it, it's my mission to find somebody that can provide it to them. So that's how I operate. And I'd love to help anybody that's got issues or questions as far as how to start a business, how to get a loan, how to repair your credit, how to learn how to handle certain permitting requirements from the county, the city, the state. And so, like you said, I had to have information. I've been doing it for a long time, and I'd love to help any client that's looking for assistance.
Wonderful. Anything else that you would like to leave our listeners with, another nugget to chew on before our next visit with you?
Yes, I'll make one little statement here. If there's any country in the world that is supportive of business and business startups and new business and new products and new ideas, you're in the right place. This country is very proactive. This country survives by innovation, technology, inventions, hardworking Americans that decide to start a business and provide a product or a service and to support themselves and their families. And there's ways to do it. There's a lot of people out there that can get help, give you help. So don't be afraid to start. Just make sure you want to do it. Okay?
Thank you very much. Thanks so much,
Linda,
Joe.
I appreciate you being
absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, folks, you've heard from
Joe Decker, and he has absolutely of information and experience. So be sure to listen in each time that Joe's on the show, because we'll be talking about different topics. One of the things that I always leave you with a quote, no matter what show I'm doing. So this week's quote is, "Your work is going to fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. The only way to do great work is to love what you do." That's a quote by Jobs, and we all know him as the CEO and founder of Apple Corporation. So go out and find that you love to do and believe in it. It'll be great work and it'll be successful. Thanks again for joining me on All Things Franchising, and we'll see you next time.
Another great episode of All Things Franchising is now in the books. You can listen to past shows by following All Things Franchising on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for joining us today, and be sure not to miss us next time when we bring you a brand new episode of All Things Franchising.